Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to this edition of Today's Issues here on the American Family Radio Network. Tim Wildman here. Thank you for listening to AFR. Walker Wildman is with me. Good morning, Walker.
Good morning. Good to be here.
And Fred Jackson's in studio.
Yes, good to be here and welcoming the rain in this part of the country.
Yeah, we needed the rain where we live. Of course, you say rain to our friends in West Arkansas and East Oklahoma.
That's a curse word, isn't it?
Yes, they don't want to hear that. But when you have dry land, it's always nice to get a
sure is.
Get a rain. All right, Dr. Ray Pritchard's on with us. Ray's back home. He was in Tupelo with us on Tuesday. He's back home in Kansas City. How you doing, Ray?
Hey, it's all good. We're getting a lot of rain up here and more to come. So
yeah,
but we managed to slide back in yesterday before the rains hit. So we're all good.
What's the drive time from?
It took us yesterday about 10 hours to get from Tupelo back to our home on the west side of Kansas City.
Memphis, St. Louis, Kansas City?
We went Memphis and up through Jonesboro and then kind of went meandering through sort of east of Branson up to Springfield and then from Springfield up to Kansas City.
Is that what the Google Maps told you to
do? Yeah, that's right? Exactly right. That's exactly right.
Some of those drives in the mountains are rough. Our version of the mountains in the south.
Two
the,
hill,
the hills of Missouri and Arkansas, was that enjoyable?
Well, let me say, the part through north central Arkansas, they could use a little work, you know?
Yeah.
just a little bit. And then as you got into Missouri, then you got a lot of three-lane and then eventually four-lane, so it evened out toward the end.
Two-lane windy highways through the mountains.
Yeah.
No fun.
You did that last year.
I did
going
that.
To Branson.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a long two-lane stretch from Branson down to I-40. It's beautiful, naturally. I mean, you pass the Buffalo Gorgeous. River and everything.
Mm-hmm.
It's really nice. But, you got to focus.
Mm-hmm.
You better be focused. No texting.
That's right.
No texting on that highway.
Maybe on the others.
Well, good point. No texting ever is probably the best policy.
Yeah. I've got a story on that ride from Branson. Get you down to Jonesboro.
Yeah.
The last time we did that, our daughter was sitting in the back seat of the vehicle.
Uh-huh.
And being in the back seat sometimes a whole lot different than driving the car as far as sickness goes.
Mm-hmm.
We got down to Jonesboro, and I think it was a McDonald's there. We stopped. She got out of the car, and she laid flat on the ground. She did not want to move. She had to settle everything down.
You mean after sitting in the back seat, winding and winding
through that
and winding?
Whiny row that you just got talking about?
Yeah,
her only solution to upset tummy was
just fall prostate
down on the ground, flat as could be.
Oh me!
Mm.
You're listening to Today's Issues. Lots to talk about. If you would like to watch us on the internet, what can they do, Walker?
They can go to a couple of different places. You can go to Facebook or YouTube to watch the show. Just type in Today's Issues. That's to watch. Just watch the show. Also, you can visit our website, afr.net, and lastly, you can download the app on your phone to listen to American Family Radio.
Does anybody do that?
Thousands of people each day listen to AFR and specifically Today's Issues.
Using the AFR app.
That's right.
Takes you about 60 seconds to download, then you can listen anywhere in the world.
Mm-hmm.
That you have access to high-speed internet.
That's right.
All right, Fred, today is D-Day commemoration.
It is, and as we've been talking about all week, the president has been doing a state visit to the U.K., had a visit with the Queen earlier this week. But the whole visit has been focused on D-Day, which is today. And earlier today in France, in Normandy, the president gathered with other leaders and survivors of that day, 75 years ago today, when Allied troops stormed the beaches there in Normandy. And he gave a very moving statement, President Trump. Here's a little bit of it, what he had to say. Cut number one.
We are gathered here on freedom's altar. on these shores, on these bluffs, on this day, 75 years ago, 10,000 men shed their blood and thousands sacrificed their lives for their brothers, for their countries, and for the survival of liberty. Today we remember those who fell and we honor all who fought right here in Normandy. They won back this ground for civilization to more than 170 veterans of the Second World War who join us today. You are among the very greatest Americans who will ever live. You are the pride of our nation. You are the glory of our republic. And we thank you from the bottom of our hearts.
Yeah, it was a very moving moment. And it was mentioned that at today's ceremony, there were actually 35 survivors, 35 of the men who were there from that day in 1944. They survived, and they're obviously well in their 90s now, but 35 were able to be part of that ceremony. And a couple of days ago, a 97-year-old survivor of Normandy actually jumped out of an airplane, parachuted into the area with the help of a current-day military person. You imagine 97 years old, and he's still able to do that.
That's amazing.
I'm not quite that old. I don't think I would do that. As I often say, why jump out of a perfectly good airplane?
I can't think of anything more terrifying, quite frankly.
I saw, you know, that video's on the internet, and you can you can see him jumping out of the plane.
I know.
He landed, Fred, and he parachuted into Normandy twice.
Look,
and he survived.
I don't even
times.
Like going on a Ferris wheel, even like the small
right.
ones.
Jumping so. out of a plane, 97 years old. Well, you know what? It's we need to. I'm thankful that we're having these commemorations, both Britain and Normandy. Which is in France. Normandy is a beach in France. My parents have been there with my aunt and uncle. And some others, I know people listening to us have been there. It's a very moving experience to actually go and see the place where these events took place. But, Ray, if you think about it, and I know this is cliche to say, but it's true, and it's cliche for a reason, and that is, without what happened on D-Day, who knows? We might not be discussing this as we are today.
Well, when you go back and look at it, I think, Tim, there's a tendency, especially for younger generations, and we're younger than the D-Day generation and those younger than us, you read about it and you think, well, it was foreordained. This had to succeed. But if you read the history, General Eisenhower and Winston Churchill and the others who planned and led the great invasion on June the 6th, they didn't know. And, of course, there's the famous story of General Eisenhower writing out the announcement that thankfully never had to be made, that in what he was going to say in case the invasion of Europe had failed. If it had failed, if the Nazi regime had stayed in power, who knows what horrors would take over Europe? Who knows what the world would look like 75 years later? I guess I'm saying, Tim, that we think, well, it had to succeed. No, it didn't have to succeed. It could have, it took a whole lot of things coming together in just the right way for D-Day to succeed. And our hats are off to those brave men, to the people who planned it, to the people who were part of the support. And then to those who jumped out of the planes in the middle of the night and those who stormed Omaha and Juneau and Sword and Gold and those beaches, that they did it. And so many died that day.
That opening
sacrifice.
That opening scene from Saving Private Ryan is probably as close as you're going to get to actually knowing what it was like. I know that you can see there occasionally you see some footage that maybe Army or some videographer took that day, but I guess in a dramatic recreation setting, that opening scene from Saving Private Ryan gives you a good idea of what those guys experienced on that day. And also, I would commend the book Greatest Generation by Tom Brokaw. I'm guessing that book's 10, 12 years old now. I'm not sure. But I read it when it came out, and it was excellent. Mm-hmm. And it gave you a great admiration and appreciation for what the people of that, the Americans in particular, of that era went through, both at home and abroad, because it was a and of course Canada, your Canadian friend, was involved as well. Mm-hmm. And worked with America and the Allied forces. Mm-hmm. But I remember reading that book by Tom Brokaw and just going, wow, the whole country was involved.
Yes.
In the World War II effort. Mm-hmm. Our whole country.
You know, I think this 75th commemoration was needed, and it came at a very important time, because here we are 75 years later. Some of the news stories have been out in recent years of the tension between the United States and France and Britain. Even the mayor of London, just disgraceful what he was doing the other day, criticizing President right. Trump in the midst of all of this. But one of the speakers today was French President Macron there in Normandy. And through the voice of a translator, this is what he had to say, and listen to the words. Cut number three.
Young Americans died here.
Pour leur pays.
They died for their country, and they died for the freedom of the world. They knew that.
Et les Français qui sont morts sur les mêmes
the French
plages,
who died on the same beaches by their side fell
de leur pays.
For the liberation of their country.
Sont aussi tombés.
But they also
pour
fell.
Que leur nation revienne.
So that their nation wants this task completed to rediscover its tradition of liberty. We need to be true to their memory.
And I think that's so important. I think the younger generation of Europeans in particular, who often are extremely critical of the United States, they need to be reminded that the freedoms that they enjoy today, to a large extent, the freedoms are owed to what the Americans did there on the beaches of Normandy 75 years ago. And they ought to be more thankful than what they are. And I think, you know, part of the reason is, and we talk about, you know, public education system today doesn't talk about this anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, there are young people today, when if you say the president is in Normandy to remember D-Day, they would have no idea what D-Day is. Mm-hmm. Not a clue, because it's not taught anymore. And that's very sad. Mm-hmm.
You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim with Walker, Fred, and Ray. Next story.
Well, next story is, while the president is away right now in Europe, the
probably be back home soon, won't he? Or is he?
He'll be coming back, but well, he's got a G7 meeting coming up, so
okay.
He's not going to be there for a little bit. But back home here, you know, one of the key stories is there's negotiations going on. Vice President Pence is involved with them, with the authorities from Mexico, because the president is threatening Mexico with tariffs, which are set to begin on Monday, because the president is not pleased with what Mexico is doing or not doing with regards to stopping more of these people who are coming up to the U.S. border. We were just looking at a headline that's out there today, mm-hmm. folks. Maybe hard to believe, but from January 1st of this year, there have been over 1 million people who have stormed our southern border and entered this country illegally. 1 million. Now, when you hear Trump officials say they're overwhelmed, there is a crisis, there's the proof right there. There is a crisis. And you have to look at the Democratic Party, which, remember when the president said, I need $25 billion to complete this 2,000-mile stretch of wall. We have a crisis on the border. They mocked him. They mocked him.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I don't think they mocked him out of ignorance of the facts. They just don't like President Trump and didn't want to do anything for him. To this day, they're still fighting him on border funding.
And to put this in context, we're talking a million in 6 months.
Yes.
We're not even through the year yet.
We're five months, actually.
We're just at the halfway mark.
Yeah.
And, yeah, 5 months going into six this month and 1 million. And in years past, 1 million in 12 months would have been historic.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, in previous years, it's been 600,000, 700,000, 800,000 a year, which is still a large amount of illegal immigrants. But we could see easily, we could see two million illegal immigrants come into the country this year. And how many of them get to walk the streets and take our American jobs? Probably 90 to 95% of them.
Yeah.
Because they don't show back up for their court date.
It was really interesting this morning on Fox and Friends, a young man by the name of Hilario Yanez, and he's a DACA recipient. He came into the country with parents who entered the country illegally. He was 1 year old. And he was on this morning. He was asked to respond to what happened in the House yesterday. The House, controlled by the Democrats, passed a Dreamers bill, and they were all celebrating. But this young man, Yanez, all right, obviously Latino, came into the country illegally with his parents.
I'm sorry, I need to correct something.
Sure.
This headline is deceiving on Drudge. 1 million this year, that's the projections through 12 months.
Through, okay.
So we have, there, so far, I mean, this is still a crisis, no doubt. Mm-hmm. But I thought that was saying that we've had 1 million to date since January.
If this rate keeps up.
At the rate that we're going, we're going to see over 1 million this year. Right now, we're at 675,000 apprehensions.
That's still a lot.
Yes.
That's over 100,000 a month.
No
but
doubt.
This young man was on this morning, and he said it is time for both parties to deal with this crisis. In other words, he says what the Democrats did doesn't mean a whole lot unless they start doing what President Trump says is needed to be done. Cut number two.
A bill that goes nowhere is not enough. I think we need to work across both parties to find common ground solutions. And I think right now, this is only looking at what the Democrats want. It's not looking at what Republicans are asking for. So I think it's time to work together. And I think this is a good opportunity for both parties to begin talking again. I think what you've seen is both parties would always go and try to at least do go after their own political agenda and at least say, at least we tried. But no, that's no longer an option. That's not acceptable. We can no longer wait for 2020. And I think we need both parties to work together.
What's gonna happen
in 2020? Enough with the blaming around.
Who are we listening to?
That was Hilario Yanez. He's a DACA recipient. You know, he went on, he said he grew up in a rough neighborhood after he came to this country, but now he works for a Fortune 500 company.
Yeah.
He worked his way through.
Well, he's, bless his heart, he's naive if he thinks that the Democrats care about this issue at all, about stopping this at all. I mean, he keeps saying let the two parties work together.
Mm-hmm.
The Democrats don't want to stop illegal immigration.
That's right.
So why do they want to? So why do they want to work on it? That's naive. The president offered a pathway to citizenship for these DACA.
Yes, in return for money for a wall.
Yeah,
and the Democrats voted against.
Right. So the Democrats, Ray, didn't want a wall more than they wanted the DACA recipients to have a pathway to citizenship.
You know, what that young man said, it's true, but as you said, Tim, it's naive. It's not going to happen.
Right.
What motivation do the Democrats have to come to the table? They're looking to 2020. Mm-hmm. They want to make this an issue. And as we've talked about, they are vying against one another to see who can become yet more leftward extreme on this issue.
Right.
So if we're waiting for the Democrats to give us a solution, we're going to wait forever.
You know, some of the positions that the Democrats have taken, even 10 years ago, would have paid severely at the polls. I mean, it would have been costly politically to take an open borders approach or a no borders approach to illegal immigration. But I guess the Democrats are saying this is where our party is. No borders. And as the senator from New York who's running the other day, Gillibrand, said, no detention.
Mm-hmm.
It's shocking, I guess, to realize that, but they've staked out a no borders position, no walls, no borders. Now Nancy Pelosi and others, they'll say, "Oh yeah, we're for border security." A few of them will, because they know how crazy it sounds to say no, no borders, like Beto O'Rourke and those others, no walls. But we'll see. I don't know if they'll pay a price in the next election cycle or not. 2020, we'll find out.
You know, we may be worse than Europe. You know, we talk about how Europe has this horrible migration problem and they have no borders and they're spilling over from Turkey, moving westward, but I think the U.S. probably, as far as numbers go, maybe not. I don't know. But when you're talking about a million a year,
yeah,
that might be more than Europe takes in from the Middle East.
Yeah. Well, the European, the Western European migration, if you will, from people coming in illegally is coming from North Africa and from Syria and the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been pouring. Now, I think it slowed down some, but they were pouring in.
Yeah,
to those countries.
Well, and that had a lot to do with the election in Denmark yesterday.
Tell us about that.
They just elected a Social Democrat Party, which is described as left of center. All right,
mm-hmm.
But they one of the big reasons they won the election yesterday in Denmark is because of the immigration policy they want to bring in. Basically, they want to put a stop to immigration. And we talked about this earlier this week. They want to put an assessment center for anybody who wants to come into their country. They want to put the assessment center in North Africa. Because a lot of the immigrants coming, the Muslim immigrants primarily, coming out of that part of the world are coming through Libya.
So this would be like a processing center, right?
A processing center, but it's not in Denmark.
Right. Which is smart.
It's in North Africa.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is what President Trump wants to do, remember?
With the U.S. Embassy.
He wants to keep the asylum seekers on the other side of the border until they have a hearing.
Right. Yes.
But the Democrats don't want that.
Mm. No.
It's crazy.
Yep.
Yeah. I will say this, though. The president, you know, he threatened to put
tariffs.
Tariffs on Mexico
mm-hmm.
if they didn't do something to help stop us,
mm-hmm.
help stop the folk coming up from Central America pouring into our country, Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, I guess, maybe some other countries.
Yeah, because 60% of the people who are coming Central across America. Our border coming across our border are not from Mexico.
Right, they're coming up through Mexico. And Mexico could do something to stop this, but they haven't done that.
That's right.
Now they are starting to do that because the president said, "Well, you're going to pay an economic price if you're going to continue to let these folks come in to the U.S. through Mexico, right?"
That's right. That's what
is it working?
That's what this fight is all about. Well, they're still meeting, and unfortunately, the president is running into opposition from his own party.
You mean on the potential tariffs?
On the tariffs against Mexico. Yeah.
But Mexico is responding by stopping people.
They're working. They're talking to the White House about what they can do.
Well, I saw pictures,
and I did see the headline you're talking about.
I saw pictures of Mexican law enforcement officials and or border control, mm-hmm. and they were stopping the people from coming. Maybe it's all for show for a couple of days.
Yeah.
I don't know, but we'll see. Ray, you still there?
I'm still here.
Okay. We do care what you think.
I just like to talk too much.
We'll be back in a minute with more of today's issues. We are going to talk about some more about D-Day with Lieutenant Colonel Robert McGinnis, retired Lieutenant Colonel Robert McGinnis. So we'll do that in a few minutes. Stay with us.
You can use this information right here.
Tim Wildman discusses life's most important issues.
So you could have a sea turtle alive out there right now that was here during the Civil War.
It's like getting a university degree.
kind of.
Tell the world.
Here's the question. How wide is the wingspan of the world's largest roach species?
Listen to the Trivia Friday edition of Today's Issues, Friday mornings at 10 Central on American Family Radio.
Trivia Friday. Woo. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. You know, I'm asked often what my favorite part of the Holy Land tour is. And that's like choosing between your children, right? That's very hard to pick just one place to see or to visit that's the most special. But to me, it's the boat ride on the Sea of Galilee, I guess, is number one. That's just a very special day because you know that's exactly where Jesus was, the Sea of Galilee. We're seeing the same terrain that Jesus saw. But there's so much more to our visit to the Holy Land, our trip there in March 2020. We'll go to Bethlehem, Jerusalem, Jericho, Nazareth, and on and on. If you want more information on the tour to Israel, go to twholyland.com. That's twholyland.com.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
Remembering the Greatest Generation, that story coming up. Liberty University is preparing students to enter a competitive job market. They have a low student-to-professor ratio, a caring Christian faculty, and more than 550 programs of study, ranging from undergraduate certificates to doctoral degrees. As the largest Christian university in the world, Liberty continues to establish itself as both a leading liberal arts university and an institution dedicated to the Christian faith. Learn more at liberty.edu. That's liberty.edu. On this day in 1944, as the Allied forces stormed the beaches of Normandy, President Roosevelt went on national radio and led the entire country in a moment of prayer. On bended knee, the nation prayed on front porches in the heartland and church houses in the Deep South.
Almighty God, our sons, pride of our nation, this day have set upon a mighty endeavor, a struggle to preserve our republic, our religion, and our civilization, and to set free a suffering humanity.
By God's great grace, the common man stared evil in the face, and they won the day. And on this anniversary, we remember the courage and determination of the greatest generation. May their legacy be inspiration for the next, and a reminder that our freedom was bought and paid for by their sacrifice. I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News commentary.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. The Gillette Company continues their assault on manhood. First, it was their toxic masculinity ad. Now Gillette can't even decide what a man is. It's an odd marketing ploy, considering their customer base is made up of men. The company's latest ad features a father teaching his daughter how to shave her beard. Yes, you heard that right. The ad depicts a girl who is quote-unquote transitioning to a boy as the girl's father introduces her to shaving as a rite of manhood. I'm quite sure this isn't what it means to raise up a child in the way he should go. As Gillette panders to transgender lunacy, they risk losing millions of customers who are tired of the left trying to force us to affirm the LGBTQ agenda. Contact Gillette at 1-800-445-5388. That's 1-800-445-5388. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Welcome back to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. If you would like to send us an email, send it to comments@afr.net. I'm Tim with Walker, Fred, and Ray. 400,000 Americans died in World War II. According, Army and Air Force, 318,000. Navy, 62,000. Marines, 24,000. And Coast Guard, close to 200,000 passed away. And you can see that at the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C., commemorated by the stars on the, I think there are 400 stars to represent those who lost their lives. And that doesn't include the wounded
Almost every family in America was affected, was impacted by the war. Well, joining us to talk about D-Day is Lieutenant Colonel Robert McGinnis. He's been on with us many times in the past, not recently, though. And he joins us now. Robert, good morning to you. Welcome.
Yeah, good morning, Tim. It's my pleasure to be with you.
What are you doing nowadays, by the way?
Well, I'm standing outside the Pentagon. I have a team here that I run at the Pentagon on strategy. And then I also write books on the side. So I still stay pretty busy.
Well, thank you for being on with us. Appreciate your service to our country and what you're doing currently there at our Pentagon. Tell us your thoughts on today.
Well, you know, like a lot of Americans, I often resurrect the images that we saw in movies like The Longest Day, which, of course, saw the Second Rangers scale the sheer cliff there at Point du Hoc, and you saw that perhaps on television, you know, programs here in the last couple of days. The other one, of course, is Saving Private Ryan, you know, put together by Steven Spielberg back in 1988. You know, you saw a young American, 17, 18, 19-year-old, you know, just mowed down, you know, by the Nazis as we attack into, you know, obviously Utah and Omaha beaches there on Normandy on June the 6th, 1944. So, yeah, it was a significant and very critical effort. It certainly turned the war. So we created a second front against the Nazis. Had we not done that, and the Nazis had gone on to defeat the Russians, they would have then turned their, you know, total focus on the West and perhaps could have defeated us, taken England, and the world would have been very different than it turned out to be.
Colonel McGinnis, it's Fred Jackson here. You mentioned you're still involved with strategy. As a strategy, today we would probably not see a repeat of the strategy that was used then because of the resources are so different. Is that a reasonable assessment?
Well, I think it is. Obviously, we have a lot of capability with our air forces, very precision like munitions, even, you know, our cruise missiles that are launched by submarines and surface ships are very precise. So I would not anticipate that we would conduct, you know, 176,000, you know, aboard 6,000 ships, you know, assaulting, you know, beachheads across a multi-mile front. That would have been, you know, okay back then when the technology wasn't what it is today. So though we have to be prepared to do that in a limited operations like our Marine Corps does, we need to be thoughtful and really thinking about the capabilities that the modern battlefield has, which are very different.
Colonel Ray Pritchard here. In thinking about the early hours on Omaha and Utah, we read the stories of companies that are just wiped out, men getting off, heading for shore, and they don't make it. And we read of this total chaos on the shore there for a few hours when the whole thing was hanging in the balance. What made the difference? I mean, we read the end of the story. We think, well, this is all predetermined. But what made the difference in the chaos on the shores at Utah and Omaha that allowed our men to make it inland?
Well, you can go through the history of mankind, and you can always find that success, you know, rides on the shoulders of the leaders. Whether they be emergent leaders at the squad level within those young infantrymen, you know, the Audie Murphys come to mind. That, you know, here Audie grew up in Texas, a young man who wasn't even weighed enough to go into the Army, had to give an exception to the rule. He goes in and he performs in a way that no one had ever seen, you know, from an individual, earning all the decorations to include the Medal of Honor. We've had a lot of those in the history of the United States. And on D-Day, we found a lot of emergent young leaders, 17, 18, 19-year-old kids. And, of course, they're more senior leaders that just led the way. The Rangers, you know, having gone through Ranger School myself and where wore the tab for the years I was in uniform. You know, they say Rangers lead the way, and in fact, they did. You know, they climbed up those cliffs against terrible fire coming from the Germans. Yeah, you know, but once again, it's all about leadership. I used to be the chief of leadership at the infantry school, and I appreciate vignettes after vignettes of how Americans have found within them the type of leaders that are needed in times of grave crisis.
Well, listen, Robert, thank you so much for being on with us. We appreciate your work and look forward to talking to you again. Thank you for sharing your thoughts on this very significant day.
Well, thanks for having me. My pleasure.
Okay.
Just one more note on this. 9,300 American servicemen died. Their graves are there in Normandy. Here's an interesting note that you may not be aware. Each marker has been adopted by a French family, and that people come from all over France to, quote, look after our boys. Now, that's not something that's talked about very much in the tensions that we have, political tensions these days. But there are still people in France that still remember. They kneel and they cry and they pray and they place their flowers for forever grateful to what the American blood that was shed that day for the freedom that we now enjoy today.
You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio. Again, our guest that you just heard from is Lieutenant Colonel Robert McGinnis, and he works at the Pentagon now. We appreciate him being on with us. Next story.
Well, although the president is out of the country, he's still looking after business on this side of the water. And yesterday, the Trump administration announced it was ending medical research by government scientists who use the remains of aborted babies. And this is just further proof, guys, that when the president made those promises during the election campaign in 2016, that he was going to honor the unborn and that he was going to do everything he could to protect them. Here we are, 3 years later almost, and the president is still doing that. And he is being applauded by folks in the pro-life movement all over the country for that.
Yeah, that's that was a big move yesterday by the White House. And specifically, it blocks the National Institute of Health from using federal tax dollars, or actually from at all, from the Institute, from using fetal body parts, which is baby body parts, for research, which is a great move by the White House. And it's really, when these things happen, it's you're almost like, was that really even happening to begin with? But it was, and that was reported on over the past 3 or 4 years. We had the videos from David Dalyden come out.
Yes.
The Center for Medical Progress come out, and that really opened America's eyes to what's going on with baby body parts.
You know, people can say whatever they want about the president, but this is certainly true. He's done more for the pro-life movement than any other president who came before him. And we have had pro-life presidents who have said the right things and have done what they could. But President Trump is a man who's kept his word. He said he was going to be pro-life. And this decision yesterday just goes along with the judicial nominations and the other statements he's made and the stands he's taken. So good for the president, good for this administration for taking the stand.
Mm-hmm. And I think thanks to the president's leadership, you've had a lot of these moves in states now to bring in laws to crack down on abortion. A variety of states, I think it's seven, eight, nine states now, are making moves to pass laws to protect the unborn. Now, they're going to be challenged, and they are being challenged in appeals courts, etc. But, hey, listen, these are state governments that are standing up, including Louisiana, which has a Democrat governor there, and he signed into law more restrictions against abortion. And so I think it's amazing. I mentioned at our story meeting this morning, speaking of abortion, amazing new technology that's just been developed in Israel, and a mom with a cell phone, and they've developed this piece of equipment that they can attach to a cell phone, pardon me, where the mom can then put it on her belly, and actually it's an ultrasound. She doesn't have to go to a clinic. She can attach this device to her cell phone and she can actually see the baby inside her womb.
Well, I hope my wife's not listening, because whenever she is pregnant again, she's going to want me to purchase that so that she can watch our baby all day and all night.
What amazing technology.
That's neat technology.
It really is. Thank God for the Israelis and what they're doing in development there.
All right. We're joined now by Dr. Michael Brown. He's been on our guest many times in the past. He is the host of the Line of Fire program, which airs Sunday here on American Family Radio from 2 to 4 Central Time. And Dr. Brown writes a lot on particularly cultural and political issues and what Scripture has to say about those issues and how Christians should respond. And he joins us now. Dr. Brown, good morning.
Hey, great to be with you again, Tim.
Are you in North Carolina today, or are you traveling?
No, I'm in North Carolina and then in Florida for the weekend.
Hey, you wrote your latest column. You were talking about President Trump, and we were tell us about that.
Yeah, so we've understood from day one that President Trump was not this incredible born-again Christian evangelist leader, that he was a New York businessman with a narcissistic past, but that seemed to be standing for many issues that were important to us, and most importantly, was the best alternative to the agenda of the radical left. But during the campaign, if you remember, at one point he held up a gay pride flag that said, you know, LGBTs for Trump, something like that, and we kind of cringed when he did that. And then he had his longtime friend and colleague, the co-founder of PayPal, speak at the Republican National Convention, and he's openly gay. So what's happened now with President Trump, for 2 years, when June came around, he didn't celebrate gay pride, in complete contrast to the Obama administration, which did 8 straight years. And he has consistently been taking stands against a lot of the radical LGBT activism that flourished under the Obama administration, to the point that he's been called the most anti-LGBT president in our history. And from our perspective, from the positive perspective, he's done a lot of good in that regard, and has even his administration spoken out against the so-called Equality Act. But his ambassador to Germany, recently openly gay man, recently said we need to decriminalize homosexuality worldwide, and the Trump administration seemed to support that. And then the last day of May, he tweets out a celebratory tweet about gay pride and appreciating all the accomplishments of gays and lesbians, and then saying that we need to decriminalize homosexuality worldwide. And within a few days of that, he had been interviewed on Fox News about Mayor Pete, the openly gay mayor, presidential candidate, he and his, quote, husband appearing on TV, and wasn't it great? And Trump said, yeah, I've got no problem with that. Others do. I think it's fine. So I wrote an article. Immediately after writing it, I saw an e-blast you put out raising your concerns to say, Mr. President, don't do this. You're going to alienate the people most important to you, and you're not going to win over the gay and lesbian community. Mm-hmm. In my mind, Tim, he's consistent on one level, and that he likes gays and lesbians, and he's got no issue, and he doesn't even have a moral compunction against gay, quote, marriage. That seems to be always been, but he fights against this stuff when it infringes on our liberties and pushes back against our Christian values. But you can't play both ends against the middle. It's not going to work.
He is ambivalent. This is my observation. Okay, I think President Trump personally is ambivalent on the whole LGBT. He's not an activist. He's not a crusader. I don't think he really cares about it. I do think he has people whispering in his ear, so to speak, probably Ivanka and Jared and some of those New Yorkers are saying, you need to do this. You know, this will deflate the hater label that you're going to get if you'll do something like this. So he says, okay, I'll do it. Just sign my name right here, or I'll tweet this. What do you want me to say? That kind of thing. That's my opinion. I don't have any facts on that, but that's what I've been told by people maybe who are close to the White House. However, the net effect is the same, because he is he didn't say anything the first 2 years about LGBT Pride Month, and then he did the last day of May of this time. So, but the if you want to say what's the main, it is the main thing is right now is stopping the so-called Equality Act.
Yes.
Right, Michael? Yeah. That's the main thing.
100%. That's urgent. We can't underscore the urgency of it. You know, when people mock...
And the president... And the president has said he's opposed to it. So he's with us on this. I hope he understands it. So the left is mad at him for not supporting it. It's a horrible piece of legislation, which basically does away with the First Amendment.
And look, Tim, people are going to mock the AFA for sounding the alarm. They're going to mock me. They're going to say, you guys are like Chicken Little, the sky's falling. No, everything we've warned about is true.
Yes.
And if the Equality Act went through, this would be an unbelievable government-sponsored assault on our liberties and our rights. And trust me, folks will be coming against us to use that left and right. And again, that's the issue here. From the gay perspective, and I quote in my article, they're not impressed with his tweet. He's not going to win over a few quote, centrist gays or something, but they're looking at his actions. And if, God forbid, he said, hey, I'm all for the Equality Act and persuaded some Republican senators to vote for it, it went through, that's it. I'm not voting for him the next time. I'll just sit out an election. I'd have to do that. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So he is going to alienate far more people. And this is one thing he's going to have to learn the hard way. You're not going to play both ends against the middle. And on our end, the reason we don't celebrate gay pride, it's not that if I had a gay neighbor that did good, I'd appreciate that. And if there was a gay athlete that did good, I'd say great accomplishment. But I'm not celebrating something that I don't believe is God's ideal. I'm not celebrating something that has a destructive agenda. I appreciate people as people. But when you make this special category of sexual orientation, and now there's with it is an agenda, no, that's why we don't celebrate it. We love people, but we don't celebrate something that is contrary to God's design and plan and has a destructive agenda with it.
Folks, you need to read this article that our guest, Dr. Michael Brown, has written about this topic that we're discussing today, and that is President Trump and the LGBT movement, and looking at it through a Christian perspective. And you've posted it on our Facebook, Brent, so if we just want to make it simple, Today's Issues Facebook page, you can click on there. It'll take you to Dr. Brown's article. Walker, you want to ask
Michael anything? Dr. Michael Brown, how do you – I've always said that there's two key issues that if President Trump waffles on, then I think in large part Christians will not vote for him, and that is this issue, the homosexual agenda, and then the second issue is life. Do you think number one, if let's just say Democrats took control of the Senate in 2020, President Trump stays in the White House.
I don't receive that. I'm charismatic right here.
Yeah.
I do not
all
receive
right,
that.
All right, all right. I'm with you, man.
Dr. Brown, what do you think needs to be done to push back against this? Because it seems like the homosexual agenda just keeps winning, you know, these little battles left and right. What needs to be done to push back on this narrative?
Well, we have to keep waking people up to where this has gone and where it's going. You know, for example, the state of New York now the legislators just voted to make it illegal to declaw cats in the state of New York, but it's legal to dismember late-term babies. We need to keep showing the insanity of this, how it goes in the direction of infanticide, the militant baby-killing spirit, and keep, you know, with movies like Unplanned and all this, to keep showing what life is about and the life of the baby in the womb, and then to show how far gay activism goes, because most Americans, even though they've swallowed the lies about born this way and all of this, most Americans are still freedom-loving. And when they see people's freedoms being taken, when they see an activist agenda that imposes its will on a culture, that's when at least some will wake up. So, look, we're not the victims. We're followers of Jesus. We overcome by life or by death. But we need America to wake up to reality, so we have to sound the alarm. We have to say, hey, look, we're not just predicting what's going to happen. This has happened. This person has lost their job. This kid was kicked out of college. This has happened on this front and this front and this front and this front. When we sound the alarm loudly enough and consistently enough, and people now see it happening in their own world, even the radicality of transgender activism and where that's going. I mean, you've got now increasing numbers of men defeating women in sports, and they're competing as females. At a certain point, you say it's just not fair. So we have to keep sounding the alarm. And for sure, if Trump waffles, the pro-life thing I think he's pretty strong on and convicted of. He still has his views about exceptions for rape, incest, and the life of the mother. But he seems strong on that. If we can get him to stay strong on pushing back against gay activism, more Christians will be motivated to vote for him. Others will still vote for him as an alternative to whoever's on the left, but others will just sit out the election, and that could be fatal.
Right.
Michael, Ray Pritchard here, thinking about the confusion inside our own movement, even inside the evangelical Christian movement, broadly considered. There are some people who call themselves evangelical Christians who say this is no big deal, gay marriage isn't any problem, or at least they say maybe it's wrong, but we shouldn't be so concerned about it because it doesn't really impact us. What's your answer to that kind of comment?
This is a teaching point right here for everybody on the Equality Act specifically, if you could, Michael, because people are hearing us talk about it, but they might be saying, well, give me two things that are seriously wrong with the so-called Equality Act. What's it going to do? What's its aim and intention? Could you talk about that related to Ray's question?
Yeah, so number one, this does affect us because when you are going to celebrate something that is wrong and make it law, that you are not allowed to speak out against it. It could well mean that in the school system that your child is going to be subjected to a radical agenda and you are not allowed to speak against it. It will mean that in the school system that when 15-year-old Johnny identifies as Jane, he shares the locker room and shower stalls with your 15-year-old girl and competes on sports against her, and you are not allowed to do anything against it. It would mean that, say, in the school system, you have a Christian school, and you have a male teacher who now says, I'm identifying as a woman. You could not stop that person from teaching, no matter what confusion it would bring. And it would mean that ultimately you and I, speaking what we speak and saying that marriage is the union of one man and one woman, as Scripture teaches, could be deemed hateful and bigoted and even punished by law. This is all reality. And when I was on just a few days back, I mentioned my new book, Jezebel's War with America. We've got to connect the dots. Folks, go to jezebelswarwithamerica.com. We've got to connect all the dots. There's a larger spiritual war, and its goal is to silence the church and put us in the closet and destroy our very values. We speak up now, or we apologize to our kids and our grandkids.
Yeah, and by the way, an aside here, but very important, if this so-called Equality Act ever makes it through, Mitch McConnell in the Senate, Republicans have vowed to block it. President Trump has vowed to veto it, should it ever get to his desk. But it will ruin women's sports in America. It's just a matter of time, because what it's saying is that men who say they're women will be allowed to participate in sports all over America at every level. Youth, junior high, high school, college, professional, and eventually it will ruin women's sports. We're seeing that now happening, what happened in Division II the other day, the NCAA. A man won the woman's hurdles. Said he was a woman. Hey, I feel like a woman. I want to run against the women, and then he won. And these women who trained all their lives, these young ladies, didn't have a chance. It's not fair. It's not right. And everybody knows it. All right. So we have to pretend like this is a good thing. Listen, Michael, thanks for being in the fight. Appreciate your radio program. Thanks for being on with us today.
You bet.
All right. Dr. Michael Brown joining us from North Carolina, the Tar Heel State. We will return. Thank you, Fred.
You're welcome.
We will return in 5 minutes with more of today's issues here on the American Family Radio Network.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.